you know, America completely lost its shit in 2016, elected Trump. You know, we have some experience with the consequences of elections here. And Argentina may have lost its shit by electing Javier Milei as their president. He's an anarcho-capitalist, but he's also, which I didn't know this until recently, a trained economist who has worked essentially as an economist for his whole career. He has a plan to privatize. Yeah, exactly. He's just like us. He has a plan to privatize state enterprise, but he also wants to broadly tax exports while also eliminating limits on exports. He also said he wouldn't cut welfare. He's giving aid to Ukraine. He's devaluing the peso. You know, so he's sort of this like libertarian nationalist type person, you could say. He's also cracking down on strikes.
Why is he taxing exports?
Well, give me a second here, Mike. Give me a second. He's cracking down on strikes. He's causing people to call him a fascist. But then again, he's also criticized Putin and Maduro, suspended relations with Cuba, Nicaragua, Venezuela because, oh, they're dictators over there. Yeah, so what do we make of all this? Is this the weirdest possible set of positions that might actually solve Argentina's problems? Is Javier Milei stacking up W's and solving Argentina's crisis? What do you think about this?
SDL start.
SDL is speechless.
Sure. Well, so I know that one of the things that makes people call him a fascist, and this is probably something we'll all dislike, is the broad crackdown on protests. So like something he did is that he said that people who were found to be protesting would lose access to welfare, which is like just a deeply authoritarian thing to do, like just deeply evil and very non-ANCAP. Like, I guess that's his way of cutting welfare or something. But
Was it the people who were protesting or the people who were blocking the streets?
I think it was people who were blocking the streets would lose access to welfare. But the problem is that since most of the protests are going down the streets, right? Like, I don't know. You're marching through Washington. Well, of course you're marching on the streets, and then you lose access to welfare.
Was it a little walk on the street, Micah? Is that what we're saying now?
Micah is a big fan of cars, as we all know. He thinks that cars are really important. They need access to the street.
I think that they're. I'm not really sure if I necessarily agree with this, but I had to look more into the specific thing you're talking about. But here's what I say that would be probably acceptable. Finding people for blocking like primary transit arteries seems appropriate. If you find them in terms of making deductions from their welfare, if they're getting some, it's like an automatic fine. It's kind of weird, though, because it's a regressive fine. Like it only goes against people who are getting welfare. So that's kind of strange. But I think that... It's not as bad as like, I don't know, just going like arresting people that are in a park, which would, I think, be the more like, if we're talking about real authoritarians, that's what they seem to do. But
well, Javier Milei, he hasn't gone.
I mean, he's only been there for like a week.
Yeah. He hasn't gone full, you know, arresting all of his political opponents yet, but he's, what did he, SDL, you might know, but he created like a national database of like agitating political movements or something like this, which seems pretty scary, right? And I don't know, he seems to be like almost like militantly anti-socialist, which is a little scary.
That's how the FBI started. And I'm not trying to exaggerate here, but like the FBI started as, let's draw up a list of all the agitators. That's what they call them. So they drew up a list of 400,000 Americans. That's like more or less exactly what Milei did. And what did the FBI do with that list in about a year? Well, they arrested like 10,000 people and they deported like another 5,000 people. It's like, I'm just not
shout
pretty foreboding.
Wow, Micah. Shout out to the FBI. Micah, pro Hoover FBI. Goodness.
Oh, my God.
Let's go.
Look, I think the domestic sort of political stuff is a little bit more up in the air because it's also more vague. It's also something like, I don't think Javier Milei campaigned on like throwing all the socialists in prison, but also we don't really know if that's what he's going to do. He has to give him more time. But in terms of his foreign policy has been interesting, I guess. Like he has called Putin a dictator. He's given aid to Ukraine. I mean, suspending relations with Cuba.
He's just pro-Western. It's just very simple. He's very pro-Western.
He's very pro-Israel too. He's very pro-Israel. Like, for the region, I guess, in general. So yeah, it's just interesting. Like I think suspending relations with Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua was like almost certainly a bad thing, you know. So we'll see how that works out, but who knows?
Yeah, I guess I'll just say it's interesting because it's actually very different than a lot of anarcho-capitalists in this country, because ANCAPs in this country tend to be very anti-interventionist and somewhat skeptical of like quote unquote the West or whatever, whereas he is like staunchly pro-America. So
I mean,
like,
yeah,
Ron Paul routinely appear, like his cronies routinely appear on like socialist and like RT podcasts like all the times because they're anti-war. So
Yeah, who knows?
I mean, anti-America in many cases. They're anti-America in many cases, but I think we should talk about his economic policy and whether we think it's going to work. Yeah, it's certainly a mixed bag. Now, I am confused about the export taxes. Is that has something to do with him trying to let a, like, currency reserves or something?
I mean, export taxes in Argentina have historically been used exactly so in order to get dollars into the economy and, like, in the central bank. And so he's, and that's why that combination of policies seems odd at first. But when we understand, like, he's just trying, like, he's trying to dollarize the economy, right? So when his view is like, we got to get as many dollars as we can, well, eliminating limits on exports, so export as much as you want, but then also a broad-based tax on exports, give me a lot of dollars for all those exports. Obviously, that's where the logic is coming in. And the devaluing the peso is just another way to spur exports as well. He also said he wouldn't cut welfare because he said, you know, it's not the poor people's fault that the government's such dog shit. So he made that commitment on TV. So, you know, it's hard to say, like, he's basically doing like a contemporary shock therapy that's a little bit different than like Washington consensus shock therapy. But I don't know, STL, how do you think it'll work out? Obviously, I assume you're probably the most anti-Malay. Like, I'm like I'm 9 out of 10 anti-Malay. STL's probably 10 out of 10. Micah's like just loves him. He's like a 1 out of 10.
Only 9.5. So. I love the organ markets. I think we should keep the organ.
That's true.
I think that one of the big things that we've seen so far, and this will seem minor, but it's that he has allowed in contracts between workers and businesses, and in contracts between renters and landlords, he has allowed them to demand payment in any kind of currency, including cryptocurrency, including physical goods, and especially including dollars. And so I'm just like, I think a lot of this follows the dollarization logic, but that's really bad. Like, if your landlord could, if your rent comes up for negotiation, Micah, and like your landlord is suddenly like, I need you to pay me in euros, you're like, what the fuck, dude? Like, this just adds another 6% to my rent. And in Argentina, that might add like 50% to your rent, depending on the fucked up inflation rate at the time, or the fucked up exchange rate at the time. So.
Well, wouldn't it have to be the same amount in dollars based on like the current exchange rate? Right? Like,
well, no, but it's just that might be a disconnect between how you get paid and how you pay your rent, right? So if you get paid in pesos,
I don't think that's going to actually like raise. Like, I don't think it's actually going to
presumably
necessarily raise
similar,
your rent.
But I'm just saying it would add like all these
the transactional costs.
Yeah,
there's a transactional cost. I mean, I think cryptocurrencies. Cryptocurrency, there's very low transactional cost there. U.S. dollars or like European like euros, there's a transactional cost there. I kind of understand why he's doing it. I don't actually support the whole dollarization push. I don't think it makes sense. I mean, it's going to require an enormous wealth transfer to the United States, which is cool for us. Bad for them, right? They're already kind of poor because they basically have to produce like an entire year's worth of gross domestic product, deliver it to us just for us to give them enough paper to use in their
Ignoring chat brings up a good point in the chat, and this was like a theme in a lot of the videos and reading that I did on Argentina, was that Argentina is already like significantly informally dollarized. And so if Javier Milei gets everything he wants and just formally dollarizes, like, do we even expect the impact to be that crazy? Because really, like, it seems like in every single video interview you do with Argentinian people, it's like, oh yeah, we just use dollars for everything anyway. Like, nobody
wants to use the peso. I didn't realize that.
Right.
Well, I mean, if so that means that that's part of the reason probably why the peso is such a dire state, right? Because people are leaving it for the dollar, demand for the peso's dropping.
I think the devaluation was an official thing, rather than an organic thing.
I'm saying the inflation, right? So like, the purchasing power of these pesos is going down. Their exchange rate with the US dollar is like, I think, been historically abysmal. Why? Well, if people are already shifting and the demand for these pesos is going down because they're using US dollars as their means of transaction, that means like demand's going down, supply is the same, it's actually probably going up because the central bank's crazy. So yeah, that would make sense. That's probably part of the reason why the currency's been doing so poorly. And that actually means dollarization makes a lot more sense, even though they don't have tons of reserves. Because so many people, so much of their wealth and consumption capacity and transactions are already happening in dollars.
I mean, it's hard to say, right? Because Argentina is not really quite the export power that it used to be. Like, it's hard to say, like, can a developed economy even be dollarized? Because you have to have, like you said, those reserves in order to be a dollarized economy. And like, how do you build those reserves if you're a middle income country that is exporting less and less over time? Like, it just doesn't, it seems like it would necessarily be very unsustainable. And they're a huge country.
It just depends on how much transactions, like, output is already being accounted in dollars, and like how big that informal economy is, right? So it's like 20% or 10%, probably not, right? But if it's already like a lot of it, then I guess it's less of a leap. It makes sense.
Let's transition a little bit. The thing getting a lot of play is all the privatization, right? So it's funny because some socialists have been like, oh, he's going to sell the state enterprise to the workers. Based? Maybe Javier Milei based crypto socialist, right? But really, that's a bit of a red herring. But the point is, like, part of the problem a lot of pundits will say about the Argentinian economy just generally, like, is like government bureaucracy and like over administration of government services, and these state enterprises are inefficient. You know, like, what do we think about this? And if that is a problem, like, is privatization just like the right thing to do? Like, what do we think the effects of this will be?
I'd love to hear Micah's opinion.
Here's the deal. I've read, I believe, virtually every meta-analysis on privatization that thus far exists. And generally speaking, the result is clear. Privatization works, and it works better if you do it the right way, right? Like, public auctions, very competitive, and sell the shares to a diffuse number of people, because many times state-owned sectors are concentrated. So we want to at least deconcentrate their ownership. Corporatization, maybe splitting them up into multiple firms. That is like the ideal way of going about it. But pretty much all forms of privatization seem to be better than state-owned enterprises, including in third world countries. That result does hold. I imagine Argentina's administrative capacity in terms of its state, the administrative quality of these state-owned enterprises, is extraordinarily low. Privatization has already been shown to work in European countries, improving productivity, like France. I imagine it will certainly work if it's done properly in Argentina. So I think it's probably good, unless some of these are like natural monopolies. I can imagine it could be problematic in a few instances if it's like utility companies.
Yeah, so I haven't looked at exactly which sectors he's talking about privatizing. I know that one of the complications I've seen in the privatization research is that sectors which require...
It's literally all of them. He said, like, I want to take every state-owned asset and privatize all of them. So there's your answer. Like,
it's a list of 41. I guess I'll have to look through it. Oh, no. I guess my point was just that one of the complications I saw is that sectors which required a lot of state subsidy tended to do worse after privatization than sectors which didn't need a lot of state subsidy. As in, like, a state-owned enterprise, which is already fairly competitive in a fairly competitive market environment, that was easier just to marketize than something which, like, only was surviving due to state subsidy. Like, those tended to show very low growth.
Well, in many cases, those are monopolistic sectors too, right? I think, like, the quintessential example is, like, British Rail. Like, okay, do you have like a quasi-private monopoly? I mean, it's sort of a monopoly, sort of not. And then just subsidize them a ton. And like, you have to do like a whole complicated price control scheme to make sure they're actually not just pocketing the subsidy, or do you keep it publicly administered? I think there's a lot more nuance in those cases than like the traditional market, state-owned enterprise in a traditional market.
Well, I think Micah, like, how would you, because one of the issues that's always characterized privatization, I think this is like the case, I mean, in every single historical example of like state privatization, it seems like we end up with like structurally higher inequality, which seems to cause pretty significant domestic unrest, right? Like, people seem to like not really like inequality and things like this. And like, one thing that characterizes, I guess, like pretty much all forms of shock therapy, let's say, as well, is a rise in inequality. And it's not also necessarily clear that leads to like a good circulation of growth and wealth amongst the people in the countries. So like, for instance, I was looking into Slovenia. So like, Slovenia is probably the only country on the planet that like has lower rates of inequality than like the Nordic countries. And when I looked into the history of that country, one of the things that characterized their growth and their economic performance was like a really measured and slow privatization over time compared to their other Soviet counterparts. Like, this is not what Javier Milei is doing, right? He's kind of like, it seems like he's leaning towards the bad form of privatization that you mentioned, which is like, fuck it, just privatize everything. Government bad. Like, you know, it's probably not going to work out too great for the Argentinian people, if I had to guess.
Well, so I think first we should really break this down policy by policy, because shock therapy means a lot of things, right? So you say that shock therapy necessarily leads to more inequality. I'm not really sure about that. Like, I'm not necessarily sure about that. I think probably in a lot of these sectors, there's not really many profits to be had. There's like a surplus being extracted and it's funding the state. So insofar that privatizing them may produce a surplus from increases in productivity, like, okay, that's just new incomes that are being generated. And I don't know, maybe the impact on the Gini coefficient is like a negative one. It's not like you're splitting the pie in a new way. You're just expanding it. And a lot of that expansion is going to richer people. Now, I think in terms of the historical record of shock therapy, I think it's not really the best, right? But it in some cases, it worked better than others. The reason why it's not really the best is a lot of these countries that did shock therapy did it in an awful way, right? They sold off the firms in private auctions, usually including one or two or three oligarchs, and they monopolized entire sectors because they were state-run monopolies. That's what we saw in Russia, right? And that's why I think like the current form of Russian capitalism is in many cases worse than even the Soviet-style socialism, because a state monopoly is generally better
than communism.
Is better than like an
communism in one country
run state backed. Like, would I rather like state bureaucrats running, you know, a state owned monopoly, or basically a private monopoly supported by the state, but the surplus directly flows into the pockets necessarily of one billionaire? I mean, yeah, but I'm not sure if Javier Milei is going to do that. It's really going to depend on how he does his privatization. I imagine it won't be nearly as bad as the structure of the Soviet Union. Many post-Soviet states employed.
I guess, I mean, my assumption is that a lot of the laws that are being imposed, like the devaluation of the peso for people who use peso to buy things, the introduction of taxes on exports and imports. I don't know if he's introducing a tax on imports. Is he? Is it only exports?
Yeah, not that I saw. I couldn't find a lot of stuff. Because generally speaking, like, his rhetoric has been very... Like, he's an anarcho-capitalist, right? Like, his rhetoric's generally been, like, mm-hmm. open everything up, get rid of all the trade restrictions. You know, he, like, one of the first things that he did was, for instance, I believe he opened up competition for domestic air travel. Like, domestic air travel used to just be the state enterprise, but he's like, fuck it, just let all the companies come in, we'll compete, and go from there, which, you know, that's probably not gonna end up being the worst thing in general. Like, I would agree with Micah that
that's
having...
Good.
Yeah, like having like state industry monopolies typically is not a good thing. Like, most countries with good examples of state enterprise don't typically have state monopolies on like oil extraction or mining or whatever it might be. Like, a lot of countries have a national airline, but it's not necessarily a monopoly domestically either. So, you know, that's probably a good thing. But, you know,
it's... Indeed, fuel subsidies. You know what I think they need is, I think they definitely need to shrink the public sector workforce. He fired like 5,000 people. We have to keep in mind that, like, in a lot of these South American countries, specifically, you know, Argentina, because of its history of parentism, there's just crazy public sector contracts that have been extracted, mostly for political reasons, and there's tons and tons of public sector bloat. So I'm glad that he's going after this employment bloat and bureaucratic bloat over, like, just doing austerity for poor people. Yeah. That's probably not ideal. He did also cut fuel subsidies, though, and that is the right kind of subsidy, because why would we subsidize something with a negative externality, aka fossil fuels?
Well, so SDL, like, I was going to ask you, SDL, like, obviously, democratic socialist, I think we would agree that the best models of state ownership are very transparent, very democratic, very, like, institutionally strong countries. People will tend to, you know, point out the Nordics, hey, they have a lot of public ownership. But they have very strong institutions, very stable institutions. They're very, very democratic. Whereas Argentina is like almost a classic middle-income South American country. They don't have as strong an institutions. They're not as stable of institutions. They obviously have a lot of economic problems as a result of their institutions. Like, is this an example where, like, maybe the privatization is just like strictly the good thing to do? Or is there a way, do you think, to develop the institutions in a way that just makes state enterprise better? Like, how do you, from a socialist perspective,
can it be nuanced?
Yeah, like how do we make sense of Argentina's problem, basically? How do we solve it?
I guess my assumption was that because it seems like the institutions are fairly corrupt and fairly inept, like there is a case for taking them out of government hands. I think the argument from like a left perspective would be do the crypto socialist thing that Milei was like hinting towards or whatever, like do transfers to workers, like maybe put the unions directly in charge and see if they can do it, right? Like if you're going to allow in competition, then don't do so with a way that could transfer a lot of wealth to like the buyers of these new firms. And I just on stuff like the fuel subsidy, my assumption, like the ideal for me, like would be, okay, get rid of the fuel subsidy, which hurts the poor, but then just add it over in for something like, say, make bus rents cheaper. But he didn't. He like raised the rates on stuff like those. Like just if your goal is to keep the hurt off of poor people, then like cut some transfers that mostly benefit rich people, or cut some transfers that only hurt poor people, then transfer them to something else. That'd be, I guess, the gradualist approach that Akonoboy is referring to in places like Slovenia, or I don't actually know what it was.
So, like, we would probably need to look into the deficit situation in Argentina. I imagine there's there must be a substantial deficit, or he's just trying to fight his own central bank by running surpluses. I guess whether how much austerity makes sense is dependent on that. In terms of like the actual privatization, I think we might all agree. Like, I think that you should privatize them using open competitive auctions. But I guess you could give like a right of first refusal to the workers there. Like first you should split them up. You know, that's the first thing you should do. But I'm fine with giving a right of first refusal. If the worker's going to buy it out and pay the full price or borrow capital.
One of the main reasons that I was leaning towards even not a right of first refusal, but just a transfer, is that people in Argentina, like there's an enormous number of people in Argentina that are extremely poor. And so because of the inequality in Argentina, you'd expect a lot of those right of first refusals to fail, not because the workers are like bad administrators, but just because the economy has been so dysfunctional for so long. I think it's something like 40% of Argentines are under the poverty line.
I guess you could do like, but I think that's just it's just a bad way to do things. Like I'm not of the opinion that worker cooperatives are necessarily more productive. I think in many cases they're less productive. We had a whole entire debate about this. Now I think they're about the same.
If we assume they're on par, right? Like let's just assume it's roughly equal, right? Then here's your problem. Go ahead.
See, if this is just the whole thing is a wealth transfer. That's what we're trying to do here. This would be a remarkably inefficient and inequitable way to do a wealth transfer. It's going to help the workers that work at like the most wealthy, valuable, capital-intensive state-owned enterprises. It's not going to help the people who don't work for a public company. Why would we do that? Why wouldn't we do a competitive auction and send people checks in the mail or any other thing that would actually be much more equitable and help the poorest?
If the proposal is to like replace this with like a UBI, like in other words, sell it, maybe put it into like SW, like a social wealth fund or something, and then use that to fund welfare. But I really don't think that's Milei's approach. Like his approach seems to be
his approach is not yours either.
I know, but
his approach is not, neither of our ideas on the table, but if we're going to do something different, we might as well do something that makes sense, right?
Well, Milei's approach is kind of, it seems like the approach that he's hinted at, I don't know if this is, I don't think any of this is like formally proposed legislation. Like he had his economic decree and stuff, but it is unclear if that will actually end up happening because he doesn't have a super strong governing coalition in either chamber of the Argentine legislature. But it seems like he's hinted at almost like a right of first refusal kind of thing where, you know, essentially workers get like first options on shares and then everything else kind of gets, you know, put in an open auction. And so, but who knows? I mean, the government, the legislature might just override that and say, no, fuck you. Like there's going to be riots in the streets or whatever. Like we can't do this. And that's kind of been a characteristic of kind of every Argentinian government that's tried to get inflation under control and things like this is like they try to do the tough shit, like raise interest rates and, you know, de-bureaucratize a lot of stuff. But then Argentinian people just kind of hate it and they end up voting for like a Peronist the next election who reverses everything.
I think SDL's idea could be a political compromise that might make this more sustainable. You could say like, we're going to give the workers 15% of the firm. So you're still like the government's still getting tons of money out of this, which they need. But like the workers get a treat, right?
It's part of the reason that I think the gradualist approach works as well is because it avoids situations like this where there's widespread protests and there's an enormous political backlash. Because sometimes that political backlash, like in places like Russia, can lead to like a sweeping in someone like a Putin and then the oligarchs take back over. Like the worst sort of case scenario is you do have a privatization, but it just goes to the wealthy. And so in an already very unequal country, due to political malfeasance, essentially, like you've sold off the public's wealth. Now they don't own it. And now some private people do. And like nothing has gotten better from it.
All right, you're kind of in a rock and a hard place, though. Like what if you're... Because the thing is, I don't know if a gradualist approach is electorally viable.
I don't think it's a rock and a hard place per se, because like one of the things we know about inflation is that expectations are one of the key... What are we wrong about inflation expectations? No, inflation expectations aren't real.
I think you're wrong. I think you're wrong on both takes. Wrong.
Well, in my view, what I will say is that I've read some research that to me was very compelling, that the quote unquote regime, the people who control the government and their general perspective towards like money printer, is very, very, very influential on people's expectations of inflation. And those in turn are very, very, very influential on the actual rate of inflation, because people will build in stuff like that into their contracts. They'll build that into their spending habits. But if they know there's a change coming and they feel they can rely on it, they will change their habits accordingly. So I guess part of the reason that to me stuff like this is to me feels frustrating from Lay is that I don't know that doing all these things at once will lead to like a trustworthy idea of like a stable government that has a clear idea of its economic ideals and is advanced and is not, you know, it's announcing them ahead of time. It's allowing businesses to slow transition. I don't think this is the right approach at all.
See, I think that's just wrong. The reason why I think this is wrong is there was a center right government before. So there were apparentists before him. And then there was a center-right government before that, if I'm not mistaken. And they tried to do the gradualist approach. They said, it's going to be painful, but we're going to do it in a slow way, and things are going to get incrementally better. And then they lost the next election, and everybody was still upset. Whenever there's going to be pain in these countries, like there's been no pain yet. Javier came into power, and he immediately was protested. People are going to fight him. He knows that he has about 4 years to get this right, to get everything make everything dramatically better. Or these South American voters who love to throw, are bipolar and switch parties all the time, will throw him out. So I don't think he has a choice other than to do shock therapy if he wants to actually tackle these systemic, long-lasting problems that have plagued Argentina for such a long time.
Yeah, that's kind of my point. I don't know if electorally, the reason I say it's a rock and a hard place is because people want to see change. Like, they want to see results, right? And obviously, people don't necessarily want to see bad results, right? Because you could change a bunch of shit and make their lives a lot worse. But at the same time, like, I feel like if Milei came in and he was like, hey, over the course of the next 20 years, we're going to, like, slowly de-bureaucratize and deprivatize, and we're going to, like, slowly cut these subsidies and allow market forces to come in. Like,
I don't think it's even, you know? It's even that simple. Yeah. Part of it's just announcing these plans beforehand and then like rolling them out in detail, like even stuff like that. Like what happened here is that he announced that he was going to cancel something like 300 laws all at once, alongside the privatization, alongside like a peso changing. 300,000, really?
Well, 360,000 is the list that he wants to terminate, which is actually just of it. Well, he's terminating entire sections of the legal framework.
Part of the reason I bring this
up
is
deleting half the departments.
Again, like there's a lot of evidence as well that businesses tend to do well, firms tend to do well in predictable environments. People need like consistent incentives over time. And so part of the frustration for me with this is that rapid changes like these can really fuck up economies. There's lots and lots of stories in economic history about how you do a rapid change that isn't announced, and that changes people's incentives very rapidly. And so that changes how they function very rapidly, which just leads people to stop working effectively.
I think that in general, you know, I think you want consistency over time, but I really think it depends on the regulations in place, right? Like whenever you say 360,000, some of those might be really bad, right? And some of those might make sense. I imagine a lot of licensing requirements are going, a lot of departments are going, a lot of codes are going. I think for a lot of companies, since it's a deregulation, it's not a new regulation, it's not a new tax, like they can just choose to continue to do the same thing in the near term, and like you're not going to get in a ton of trouble, right? Because they're having regulations removed off their backs. I think yes, he was clear about a lot of this during the campaign and last time he ran.
Consider an example, one example of regulation being removed with something like, I don't know, wage protections, right? So like, let's say there's really bad, observation of companies which are not paying their workers enough, right? They're not getting them overtime, stuff like that. And the unions can't really fight back because Malaysia also talked about trying to ban strikes and so on, right? So it's very hard to fight back through that channel. It's very hard to fight back through the administrative channel. So that means that, I don't know, workers get systematically underpaid. That means you might see less consumption domestic firms, right? Like that could lead on to a knock-on effect where you still have bad inflation, but now consumption is going down. So you have a really bad outcome. I'm just like, I have no idea what the overall like, thicket of Argentine regulations is, but it's not hard to see how incentives could lead to reduction.
I'm unsure about this notion that like the deregulation is going to cause like a significant demand shock that's going to cause a recession. I almost think that like,
I mean, there were stories of people closing up shops yesterday or like a few days ago because of rapidly changing prices.
I don't necessarily doubt that. I am skeptical. I'm not really aware. A lot of research that says that there's a huge impact from labor market regulations on aggregate demand, unless they generate tons of disemployment. And you can look at minimum wage studies. They cause disemployment and they cause a wage increase for a lot of folks. AD effects are like muted in the grand scheme of things, right? There's an impact. But in the grand scheme of things, I think everything else he's doing, like the massive austerity he's expecting, is going to have way more of an impact. I think the issue with canceling those labor market regulations may be that workers get screwed, not so much that like they cause a recession.
Well, I'm trying to say, you know? I think that's probably the best point. I'm saying like, I think like, first off, I would like the workers not to be screwed, but like beside of that, like an example would be that if say America got rid of minimum wage regulations overnight, it might not be a bad issue right now because we've got a hot labor market. But let's say we were in really dire straits, like, I don't know, 2019, and Trump was like, all right, COVID's here, time to get rid of the minimum wage or something as unemployment hits like 10% or something. And he doesn't put stimulus into the economy. He's not sending more money into the economy.
Wages are sticky.
Why are they sticky? Right? Because there's forces behind them keeping them there. It's not just that like the firms like to keep them there just because they really value consistency. It's also because they can't pay less.
Well, wages are sticky for people that are making incomes way higher than $7.25, or like, you know, in many states that have like a $12 minimum wage. Like wages are sticky for everybody, including in recession.
Suddenly wages weren't sticky. Like midway through 2021, because the forces of really low unemployment led to a rapid rise in wages. So my point is just like, imagine the opposite, right? Imagine if there was a force, say massive unemployment and a removal of minimum wage laws, which is the reverse, and suddenly they wouldn't be sticky.
There's wage contracts. So in recessions, the reason why employment is because we can't just do wage cuts because wages are downwardly sticky, specifically downwardly sticky, not so much upwardly sticky, right? Like that's the reason why there's unemployment. Otherwise, there would just be wage cuts across the board, right?
Yeah, but okay, from the perspective of aggregate demand, someone taking a X percent wage decrease and like that same percent of people getting unemployed is like, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. You know, not from the human perspective, but from the perspective of like how many things get consumed in an economy. So my point is just like I as an example of how these things could lead to a knock-on effect where you've already got bad inflation and now you've got like a decrease in demand. That's all I'm trying to say. It's pretty clear to me.
Well, there's some regulations
that can really fuck the economy.
I mean, even Javier Milei has said, like he said like over and over and over again, he said this during his campaign, he said this throughout his entire presidency thus far, is like, hey guys, things are gonna, you know, get bad. You know, it's gonna be bad, the things that we're doing in the short run.
Never gonna happen.
But you know, like in the long run it's gonna be better. So you just have to kinda just like, hey, let's just calm down, right? Like he's been like relatively honest in that messaging. Like even he is predicting probably like a pretty bad short term economic outlook because of these changes. But I think that's really the question is like, do we expect in the long run, like yes, short term pain, but like do we expect long term gain? Like that's the big question for me, right?
I think that reducing inflation. I think I'd probably prefer a peg. That might be much more realistic. Hello, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're a little dicey there for a second.
Oh, okay. What I was saying is, you know, I think if inflation comes down dramatically, you have these privatizations of firms. You reduce a lot of administrative load, and hopefully you get rid of like the actual bad regulations. You liberalize your trade substantially. I think like all of those things are going to have a positive impact. And I think that like inflation, high inflation over a long period of time does have a serious impact on things like foreign investment. So I imagine it'd be good if it works, right? Like the worst case scenario is you have like a perpetual recession and like you just don't get out of the recession. You don't have a quick bounce back. The only thing worse than an inflation is like an economic depression, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of why I was like I think there's some things that are likely to lead to surpluses, like monopolies from inept firms are probably not a good thing. So like with the airlines, it probably leads to a slight increase of overall incomes. But at the same time, like my bet is just that if you really fuck over workers or you make it so that they can't, like, so that they're spending a lot of their consumption on stuff like changing rents or like a lot of other laws that might be coming in, then you might see a decrease in demand, and that will just worsen. Like as prices, if prices go up, that reduces demand, and if demand, like the amount that workers are consuming goes down, then that reduces.
If prices go up, that reduces.
If prices
demand.
Go up, then the amount consumed goes down. Sorry, but
what's prices up? Demand shifts, supply shifts. Like what's pushing it?
Sorry, I think you cut out.
Because like, if
I couldn't hear it.
If, like, what is causing the price change, right? So, like, if prices are going up, aren't they going up because AD is shifting right, which means demand's going up?
Well, presumably prices could be shifting just due to ongoing inflation. Like the what you were talking about is the bad outcome is that he doesn't solve whatever is causing like the long term inflation problem, and so nominal prices keep going up, but if wages don't keep course, then you have like a disjunct between those, right? So the real real rise in prices.
But so we believe that the prices are set by supply and demand primarily, right? Unless in extraordinary circumstances.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying right?
Like unless you have market setting power.
Most of the time, it's set by supply and demand. Yes, but I'm saying that in these are extraordinary circumstances where suddenly workers might not be able to pursue their normal consumption habits. Right? Like it's not just
can you talk about something in which like can you talk about an example of something where like the price is going up? It's just like one example of like it, like your thinking applies to this. Like grapes, would grapes count? The price of grapes going up?
Sure, let's go with grapes.
Okay, so the price of grapes is going up. Why is it going
up? Usually, like post Keynesian theory is either the markup's going up or the unit cost is going up. So either it
so
costs
it's
more
not
to
that
grapes,
the demand is going up.
Well, it could be like one of the reasons that the markup could go up is if the market gets less competitive. That could be a long-term result of less people demanding grapes. There's like overproduction, and that's sort of what I'm talking about. If production stays the same but consumption goes down, then there might be more like slack in. So, if demand
wait,
goes
if,
down,
if the supply is the same,
yeah,
demand goes down because wages go down. I think the price will go down.
The price will eventually go down, but a lot of these, okay, I will also add, there's an elasticity to a lot of these. People have to consume rent, they have to consume food, so what we'd assume is that certain bundles, like grapes, actually, possibly, would continue to be consumed at a fairly similar amount over time, but then that would lead to, like, a recession in other areas where the consumption is elastic. So, for example, those airlines...
Can we talk about grapes?
Can we talk about grapes? Sure, we can talk about grapes.
Yeah. Well, I want to make sure, I'm not really understanding what you're saying. And I don't imagine much of the audience will be. Maybe I'm just kind of slow. I'm trying to understand why the grapes are going up in cost. Now you say, well, maybe the input cost is going up. Okay. So like the input cost, maybe like some of the farm supplies for creating the grapes, maybe that's going up. And so that leads to a reduction in the supply of grapes. I'm not necessarily sure that's happening. So I think it's probably the demand that's shifting. The demand shifting because you have a lax monetary policy that you know, in GDP is growing at a rapid rate, largely because the money supply increases, maybe because of velocity changes, which means demand is going up. And so like, I don't understand how you could say, well, prices are going up, but wages aren't going up to keep up. That means the demand's going to be too low. And now we're going to have a recession. The inflation is the product of a demand that's growing at too rapid of a pace. In GDP growth is off trend for what it should be, right?
So the problem is that demand is one component, but market power, like I'm trying to say, first, there's unit costs.
But this is grapes. We're talking about grapes because the market power thing, like we already admitted, that is in the majority of these instances, we have normal market pricing. We're not seeing market power being reflected,
sure,
right?
So for example, in the United States, just as a country, which is not Argentina, in the United States, there is some evidence coming out that markups did go up significantly over the course of like the COVID, like a decent chunk of the inflation was in fact due to a rise in markups, not just due to a rise in supply costs. And so I bring this up.
I think that's,
it's easy to imagine
reflation,
like rapid market transitions like that of Argentina, where suddenly people have like rapidly different incomes, suddenly regulations are very different, that you won't have like a market working perfectly, and markets are, markups are all brought to the competitive equilibrium. Like, you know, the what's the word? Tautomatism. The market gropes towards the equilibrium price. It's not something it arrives at immediately. I'm saying that you could, I think it's easy to imagine a case where consumption drops dramatically, prices stay high, and firms keep the markup high insofar as they can, just because there's not like the market isn't competitive immediately.
And I think SCL, I think what SCL is describing is like part of the, I think it's part of the reason why inequality tends to go up after shock therapy, right? Because you do have this transitionary period where the market is liberalizing, competition hasn't quite, you know, set in yet, but obviously the market power still exists on the side of the suppliers, right, in a deregulated fashion. And so that's one of the dangers of shock therapy, right, is that unless you have like internal structural ways to decompartmentalize markets and, you know, demonopolize markets, which, I mean, to be fair, like that's part of the thing that Javier Milei
like, we're talking about grapes
advocate for. Michael, why the fuck do you keep talking about grapes? Jesus.
Because, like, I guess, okay, the greedflation folks, like, love to, like, just kind of imagine, oh, there's all these monopolistic firms.
It's not all greedflation, but it's, like, some portion of it is all greed.
And, like, they're causing this huge markup, and, like, that's gonna change, like, our entire perception of this thing.
Micah, but you're not, we have to ground it, we have to ground it in Argentina, right? So, we're not talking about the fucking grape market in an economics textbook, right?
But we need to talk about this specific, so if you're going to make an economic forecast about like this idea about, okay, there's tons of market power in all these sectors, so much so that we might see a situation where, you know, that the prices they're going to be setting is not going to be close to the equilibrium price, and that's going to somehow cause a recession or cause a depression. It's going to be like remarkably different than what we'd expect. Like, I think we need to actually like look at these sectors and say, okay, these are the ones that are really concentrated where this is relevant. Because, like, I'm assuming in the majority of instances, it's not, right?
There's an example in the United States. Like, food is a fairly competitive market. Like grocery stores don't run high margins, right? Their markups are usually fairly low. I think the profit margin of the average grocery store is like, I think 3-5%, something like that. So pretty low. And that means their markup's probably like, I don't know, 5-10%. So my point is just that despite that, over the course of say 2020 to 2021, 2022 or so, those markups rose significantly despite there being substantial competition, because during the high inflation, which Americans weren't used to, they were able to raise the prices without people really, really fighting it and going to another store. Like, there are instances.
Yeah, okay. So it's like,
someone privatizes like a third of the economy and then like rapidly changes like the rate at which a currency exchanges. They change like how exports function. They change like a million rules in the economy. It's not hard to see to me how people might not be like the most like price clearing rational consumer in that environment.
Well, I don't think they are right now. There's already hyperinflation. Like, I think this is, to the extent that inflation starts coming down, I think that the actual price setting power of individual producers goes down.
What do we think the cause for current? I mean, it's not. I don't think it's hyperinflation in Argentina, but the very high inflation in Argentina.
I mean, it seems like
50% per month or whatever.
It seems like historically the cause of Argentina's inflation, and it's the same thing today, is just like high government deficits, printing money, and, you know, bringing on debt essentially, right? Part of it is also the I've heard
the average inflation rate was 206.2% per year, 1980 to 2022. What is it today? Oh, it's 160.9%. this year. So I would definitely consider that hyperinflation.
It's very high.
I think the technical, I'm not trying to quibble. I'm pretty sure the technical definition is something like 50% per month. This isn't quite there, but it's
not
high.
As bad as Zimbabwe, really, obviously. Yeah. But it's pretty bad. I mean, it's just really, really bad. The analysis that I've seen seems to pit like weak exports, printing money, high deficits as like the main causes for inflation in Argentina. And, you know, it's hard to argue with that in my experience, but what do you guys think? I mean, do you guys have significantly different narratives for why inflation is so high in Argentina?
Do they have a monetary finance? Like, are they employing monetary finance?
What do you mean? Like, they have a central bank. I mean, what do you mean?
Oh, no, monetary finance.
Go ahead.
Are they monetizing like their debt? Like is the central bank just doing straight up transfers to the government without like
Yeah. I've read.
Okay. Yes.
So, I read that so there is seniority.
Let's explain this in normal terms, okay? Because I feel like a lot of this is not understandable. So usually the federal government sells bonds and the central bank buys them. That's what happens in the United States. Whenever you have monetary finance, the central bank just gives cash to the government and they don't ask for any debt back. And so it's basically printing money to finance spending. That doesn't happen in the United States. That does happen in some South American countries. It does happen in Zimbabwe. And it did happen for a time in the UK.
Well, in Argentina...
So you're saying yes?
From what I've read, that does happen in Argentina. It doesn't happen to the extent that it's happened like in places like Zimbabwe or Venezuela or like Weimar Germany or something like that. Because the government at least has like some idea that like, hey, we can't just like infinitely print money. There's going to be like some low percentage of, you know, government spending that can be based on printing money. But that does exist in Argentina as well. Again, like this seems like the three main causes is weak exports. It's going to be printing money and then relatively high fiscal deficits causing these inflation problems.
Yeah, I think that's about correct.
Yeah, I mean, so in that regard, I mean, I just like obviously we can come up with like more progressive ways to do this, and like insofar as those ways do exist, like I mean, it's hard for me to say. Like, it's just it's difficult because that's really my question is like long term, what are the outcomes here, right? That's all that really matters to me because.
I mean,
I could see a world where he privatizes all this shit, opens up the markets, inequality goes up by like 50%. But in, you know, 20 years, Argentinians are like significantly wealthier than they are today because of all of those structural changes that happened. But, you know, I'm just not sure. It's very difficult to predict because some shock therapy countries turn out completely awful. Like it actually just seems like it was just bad to do all those things, right? So, you know, it's very difficult to predict from my perspective.
Yeah, like I guess if we think the causes are in short like high deficits, right, that are or like maybe high debt, then you have to raise income somehow. So maybe we don't mind his export tax. I don't know what Micah thinks about that. I don't know, like what is the ideal way to raise money in a country like Argentina? To me, I'm like, I look at that high inequality and I'm like, okay, tax the rich. It's Bernie Sanders time. Like, yes, it'll hurt. And yes, that'll also have consumption problems like I was just talking about. But like at least it'll have consumption problems for the people who will like see the least reduction in their standard of well-being. Versus exports are
Argentina already does progressive tax schemes all the time. I mean, they're the country that does one-time wealth taxes. Which, I mean, there is an elasticity because they routinely do one-time wealth taxes, which is a little bit bizarre. But I think that, like, you're not in an environment where it's like, oh, we can just raise taxes on the rich. We can just raise taxes on the rich. There's no elasticity. Yeah, it's fine. We'll just tax the rich. It's gonna be fine. I think there is a significant elasticity in a country like Argentina.
Elasticity,
and I think that there is to the taxation by rich people, right? So there's an idea. Like, oh, we can just tax them. It's not going to do anything. I think it will actually do something. I think that there's a deadweight loss that's caused by like people working less. That certainly happens. Deadweight loss caused by capital taxes in terms of less investment. That does certainly happen.
So, well,
there's also rich people leaving.
Just wealth.
So let's look at the tax system.
I mean, aside from like income taxes, I know income taxes have some deadweight loss, but so my understanding is that you still have fairly high productivity and very high like workforce participation by people who are very rich in like very redistributive tax system models. I know that the Nordic countries have fairly flat taxes on the whole. They tax a lot of people, a lot of money, but.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of studies that have been conducted on the actual impacts and like elasticities of like income to taxation, elasticities of capital gains to taxation, corporate income taxes. I think traditionally speaking, corporate taxes are one of the worst in terms of the measured impact we see. People disagree a lot about capital gains taxes. I don't think they have on like the lower end, we see a huge amount of impact.
I will say, I'm pretty sure like, most of those studies are just correlational. Like they're not even like synthetic control type causation. They're just looking at like, hey, does a country have higher corporate taxes? Does it have higher or lower growth or whatever?
No, that's, I mean, in terms of the studies that like I've actually looked at, that's certainly not, but it's like there are think tanks that study taxes that use more sophisticated methods than simply, look, Look, all our favorite countries have low corporate tax rates. Like that'd be a pretty stupid way of doing things, right?
This is interesting. I'm reading an Economist article right now. Man, Malay's a fucking weird guy. So it says, alongside this, and he's talking about just decreasing spending generally and the devaluation of the peso, the administration will increase taxes on imported goods from 7.5% to 17.5%.
So he is doing an import tax?
Apparently. What? It says, however, okay, again, ideological...
I just
looked
for it. I didn't find it.
It says,
oh my God.
I'm looking at the Economist article. Javier Milei implements shock therapy in Argentina. And then it says, child benefits will double. So, I mean, based, I guess,
sure.
As will the value of a government food
card. Are they valuing in the peso, though? The thing that he just devalued by 50%?
I'm not really sure, honestly. It says that the child benefits will double, as will the value of a government food card for the country's poorest. The idea is to cut spending while temporarily increasing taxes to raise revenue in order to lower the annual deficit. So, I mean, it seems like he's targeting that. It's just a matter of like, what is the long term change? Because like the devaluation of the peso is on an international market. Like, it's not like he like a devaluation of a currency doesn't necessarily mean that like poor people have half as much purchasing power. And so I'd imagine that like a doubling of a child benefit or a food, like essentially like a food stamp that we give to people, probably has some like real term benefits for people. But again, like he's all over the fucking place. Like, he's not really like, he's acting like a responsible libertarian. We thought he was going to he had his chainsaw out. We thought he was going to come in, cut all these government programs, get rid of everything. But, you know, it seems like he's being significantly more measured.
He seems like he's doing lots of the right things. I mean, like the privatizations, I think if he administers them correctly, most of them are going to be for the best. Deregulations, I think those labor market deregulations, some of them will be appropriate, some of them will be bad. A lot of the other deregulations, I mean, I imagine there's going to be some good stuff in there. The trade stuff seems to make sense. I'm not so sure about the taxes, but distributionally, I feel like he's doing what you want, SDL. I mean, he's trying to do austerity in a way that hurts the poor the least.
SDL,
and
can
that seems
we say?
Like what I would do.
Can we say he also proposed cap and trade? He joined the Paris Climate Agreement. Can we just say Javier Milei stacking up W's, SCL? Is he stacking them up? Okay, or
joining the Paris Climate Accord? Really?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like he's fucking he's a weird guy. Like he's all over the place. It's, you know, it's like one
that's
he's like
for libertarian.
He's like one day we do something that makes the left happy, then the next day we do something that makes them angry. It's like, you know, you never know what you're getting from this guy.
I mean, I guess my view is that it seems like I'm betting that in real terms he was just equalizing the food card and the payments, just because of the devaluation of the peso. I'm assuming that the doubling of that value is the same thing as the halving of the peso value. But I don't know. I mean, maybe there's short-term benefits to that before like prices catch up to that.
Like we're settled on time will tell, you know. I mean, who's to say? It seems like some of the stuff could be good, you know, we all agree with that. But fuck, he's only been president for like less than a month.
I think public employment cuts are probably the primary, and subsidy cuts are probably the primary mechanism by which I think he should do austerity, and also just not spending a lot of the money that he's receiving by these sell-offs. SDL, it seems like your point is that he should actually just raise taxes, right?
Well, I mean, one of it's like stop the money printer. The other thing you want to stop is the deficit, so you don't have to use the money printer to pay it off.
How are you going to raise revenue? Like, that's the question. So, like, what I said is do the sell-offs and cut public employment.
Well, the problem with the sell-offs is that they're only temporary, right? So, like, to me, the thing is, like, oh, you need this government money. Well, at least do the sell-offs into some structure, like, and then invest them into an SWF or something. You need the ongoing money. Otherwise, you're just going to have those deficits. Like, the options are essentially now or austerity later. And to me, what I'm wondering is if he's doing the privatizations now so that he can afford to keep the social spending, and that's going to get cut later. Like, you know, you only sell the company once.
That's sort of what happened. I think it was like in the 80s or something like that with one of the Argentinian governments, where they had like a big privatization, like Washington Consensus type movement, where Perón had basically, I think, been put in like prison or something. Like he had gotten thrown out of office by a military coup, ironically, let's say. And they came in, privatized a bunch of stuff. They established a one-to-one exchange with the dollar. So they had like a peso that was worth one American dollar. And the way that they backed that was by selling a bunch of state assets. So they had a lot of like one-time cash to back that exchange rate. But then it ended up completely fucking crashing and becoming a disaster because, like STL is pointing out, that was only like temporary money. And so as soon as it all circulated, they had a currency crisis. It fell apart. And then the economy was basically fucked after that because the peg fell apart. So there's a chance that could be happening today as well. But I mean, to be fair, like Javier Milei, like he is like an actually trained economist. Like he's obviously an ANCAP, which means that he's like completely wrong on a lot of shit. But I imagine he at least understands like the basic mechanics. Like we can't just rely on state asset money to back a dollarization movement. But, you know, he is an ANCAP, so he must be kind of stupid. So, I mean, you know, like, it's hard to say. He's just a really weird guy.
Here's what we should agree on. The last thing you should be cutting is the benefits that the poor people rely on. So long as those benefits are not, like, having, like, crazy welfare cliffs or, like, super bad employment effects, right? I think we can all agree on that. And, like, tax cuts are probably not in the cards. I mean, tax increases are probably not in the cards. But, like, that is not the thing you should go after. And I think he's going for the right thing. Now, here's the thing. I will not tweet out, I'm Team Javier Milei, because I don't want to look as dumb as the Dem Sox look with Venezuela, okay? I'm going to claim the W once it works. And I'll just say, look at this, guys. Look, this works for now.
A drive-by shooting on the Dem Sox mid-argument.
Yeah, they were like, yeah, this is base. This is the perfect example of how they're like,
Micah in 1980 would be like, no, I'm not going to claim any successes of Pinochet. I got to wait for it to work. Teehee.
Yeah. Well, hey, there we go.
I would have been right to do so.
STL, any final thoughts?
I mean, that's the point. You would have been right to do so. The Chicago boys sucked. I guess, I mean, the take that I was trying to give is I think we've all offered maybe some more progressive ways to do this. It sounds like Javier Milei is maybe doing some of them, though it's not clear to me. Someone in chat was mentioning that the official rate was a fantasy because there were limits of how many dollars you could purchase. So it was like, it wasn't really applying. So I actually don't know to what degree the devaluation of the peso means anything, if he's just bringing it in line with like the real rate. But I guess, I mean, my thoughts are that I would want if you have to privatize, because you need to like make the money to fill the deficit or whatever, then you should want to do so in a way that is as sustainable as possible. So that probably looks something like social wealth funds. And if you can afford like to not get all of that money, then you want to try and give that off in a way that doesn't just massively concentrate wealth into a few people's hands, which led to the like extremely bad both political and economic situations of Russia and like Belarus.
Sovereign wealth funds, a topic for another day, which we will destroy Mike on, okay? His anti-sovereign wealth fund nonsense.
Fun fact, Econoboy, Russia does actually have a sovereign wealth fund. I believe it's pretty small, but I think it was during the Russian invasion of Ukraine, I saw some of the dumbest people alive citing to it as proof that Russia was a socialist country.
It's true. So. It's true. Look, I mean, every country fucking on the planet basically has a sovereign wealth fund, except for America. So we should probably get one started.
Well, whenever your poster boys are Saudi Arabia and Russia.
Hey, come on. Norway, they're the biggest sovereign wealth fund. They're the poster boy. All right. But all right. Well, hey, let's
interestingly, just one last note on that one. So Mike and I have talked about wealth taxes, and he's obviously a big opponent. Sovereign wealth funds are the effective wealth tax because they take up an increasing proportion of the country's wealth by accumulating in value as wealth accumulates in value. So I'm just saying, you know, you want your effective wealth tax. We should simply do a one-time wealth tax. Well, just one last time. It'll work this time, guys. And then just put that in the sovereign wealth fund.
Room. I like
it. I've actually said that is probably the best way you could do something like that. So.